This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy, well, my broken tactics guy, bless his heart, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Aloha.
You have a very bad back, Nathan.
I've got a terrible body all over, to be honest, but specifically it's my back I'm struggling with. So we tried to record yesterday, but your internet connection where you were was insufficient, and I was in a considerable amount of pain when we tried to record yesterday. Things have improved since then, so you're getting a slightly more upbeat version of what could have been.
Yeah, yesterday was a nightmare. I was down at my parents in Somerset. They are now my social bubble. Fought off my sister to be the champion child and be able to actually go and see my parents, which is great. But the internet connection in their village was horrific. And I could hear you and Bardi, but it was very delayed and it sounded like you were through a wind tunnel or something. So we decided to give that a miss. I mean, if anyone is listening is a physio and can help Nathan out with his back, please do get in touch because, bless him, he's really suffering at the moment. So that would be nice. But at least we've got Spurs back, right?
If there are any physios listening, I have some sort of muscular injury to my spine, which may or may not be connected to the patellofemoral pain syndrome in my right knee. And also I have some kind of 18-month ongoing tendinal issue in my left forearm. Sweet. Let's talk about Spurs.
Mate, you're not selling this. You're not selling this. You've made it sound like a nightmare of a case now. No one's going to take that on.
No, I just mean, like, I think generally physios or like, more advanced physios specialised in an area. So rather than just being like, I have a bad limb, I wanted to be like, these are my specific issues in case any of those catch your attention and intrigue. So, you know.
Bless.
Quick itinerary.
You can be a case study for someone. So we're going to try and get this out before the West Ham game and talk primarily about the United match. I think there's quite a bit to talk about, to be fair. It was an interesting match for a whole multitude of different reasons. But let's start off with the team selection. It's normally a good place to start. What did you think when you saw that team news?
Well, I was disappointed by, you know, the classic midfield, the wing Sissoko. And in practice, they were fine. I guess we'll come back to that. But like, I was never going to have extremely strong feelings about the lineup because obviously we're essentially in pre-season at the moment. You know, people are still building fitness. So you never know who is or who isn't going to be fit. It was certainly interesting that like our three long-term injuries, Kane, Berg, Irvine and Son were all fit to start. I guess that's the advantage of like being out with injuries, that then you've then got that slow time to build your fitness. So it was nice for me that all three of them were on the team sheet, but outside of that, it was hard to have, you know, tactical feelings about the 11.
It was actually four because Sissoko had been out for little while as well. So
the whole gang.
Four players straight back in, and three of them playing the full match, which was a surprise. We'll come back to that. The absence of Alderweireld was a concern straight away, but that also meant that Dier had to drop into the back line, with obviously Tanganga still being out, Vertonghen not being trusted. So that restricted our midfield options. We know that Lo Celso, so one player we did have some intel on was Lo Celso, who Mourinho said had required physio during this whole period and obviously couldn't get that. So he's starting from a lower level than the other players and playing catch up now.
I feel for him. What you should do is start a podcast and then put a call out at the beginning of this podcast for physio.
Amazing. He should. I mean, the other option was to play Ndombele in midfield or even Skip. But I see why Mourinho went with Winks and Sissoko, even though I really, 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 really hate that midfield. But like you said, it could have gone a lot worse than there. The interesting thing about the team shape was that we saw the back three when we had the ball. So Davis would tuck in and make it into a three. But when we didn't have the ball, we saw Son on the left and Bergwijn on the right drop back to the extent that they were almost playing as auxiliary fullbacks / wingbacks. That's something I don't recall having seen before. Do you, at Spurs?
Not at Spurs, but it is a Mourinho classic. So he used to be infamous for his use of the 6-3-1, where his fullbacks tuck in, played the wingers as wingbacks, and a three-man midfield and one up front, whereas this was more of a 4-4-2 with, a 6-2-2 you could get towards calling it. But I don't think the wingers were that defensive. And they also sometimes played narrow in a midfield as well. So that was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. That must have been a really exhausting role for both Son and Bergwijn. They were both joining the attack as quickly as possible as well. And I thought Bergwijn did that particularly effectively. He defended well, he helped Aurier out well, but then he got forward, as we saw with his goal. But the other part of that new tactic, if you want to call it that, was that Lamella, who was playing essentially up with Kane, was doing the majority of our hold-up play, which I found fascinating. I've not seen Lamella play that effectively with his back to goal before. I thought he was really good at that. The passing wasn't always there, but he was showing for the ball constantly. He was one of the few players able to take it in tight spaces and actually keep hold of it. And that was a promising sign, I thought. What did you think of Lamella's performance, Nath?
Yeah, I was really impressed. I mean, again, if we talk about it being pre-season, it's essentially August. It's all about Lamella, isn't it?
That's a very good point.
But I think he just has a natural flaw to his fitness where he's never unfit. He's always going. And so I think that when people are beginning to warm up, he's already there. And that's just the advantage that he always has, because he has this tempo to his game that in August traditionally is just ahead of everyone else, and then they catch up with him. But he wasn't hugely effective in possession. He wasted possession a few times.
Yeah.
He could have, he missed a few incisive passes, but his ability to find space, to get on the ball, to carry it, to keep being that out ball option, and then also his defensive work. I mean, we know about Lamella's defensive work, but Lamella's defensive work in the Pochettino setup, where it's about harrying the defender and everything. But he was really good at blocking off options into midfield and doing a lot of Kane's leg work, you know, in and out of possession. He was really good for that, and then obviously for that reason he came off around 60 minutes for Jedson. Yeah. To carry on doing the same kind of work.
And it was notable that we dropped off, I thought, once Lamella went off, in terms of our tempo in the middle of the pitch. And when you were talking then about the fact that Lamella is up to speed quickly, I wondered, I mean, this could be wrong, but he's very intense person, Lamella. Yes. He asks a lot of himself and his teammates. He gets really angry when he makes a mistake. He seems so incredibly focused, like he's just in the zone times a million before games, and then just hares around on the pitch like a man possessed. And I wonder if sometimes he asks a bit too much of his body and ends up causing himself injuries or burnout. I don't know if that's a thing, but it certainly seems that way.
Absolutely.
And we've seen him, like you mentioned, start seasons really well before and then quickly either get injured or go off the boil. And I wonder whether there's something there where he needs to just learn to rein it in a little bit and be a bit more cautious with the way he's using his body, particularly as he gets older. But he certainly had an effective game, although, as you say, wasted a couple of opportunities to find a pass on the counter. So Bergwijn we need to talk about because he scored a great goal, but let's quickly talk about Son first. Dolphinbot said, was Son just having a quiet night, or do you think the formation was limiting his impact?
It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell, and it's too early to tell. We've seen Son play, you know, in like counter attack in mid block setups and do very well. So I wouldn't say it's that. I've just been and had a look while we were talking at Eric Lamella's injury history, and as few as maybe one of those injuries has been muscular. He's had a lot of joint injuries and soft ligament and tendon injuries, so probably not an issue with him sort of redlining himself. I think he's just sort of, you know, a little physically fragile in the joints, as it were, rather than I do think he fatigues himself. I do think he puts himself in a situation where he needs to come off after 60 minutes because he's done 90 minutes of work in that time. He also, I follow him on Instagram, appears to have a home gym, so I think he is just like, you know, while everyone else is enjoying the time off having a pizza at home, he's in the home gym, on the bike, on the yoga mat, just being intense. Imagine like living with Lamella and his just constant level of, you just want to chill, you want to hang out, and he's like, everything's competition, everything's 100%, flying in to dinner, you know.
He'll watch reality TV with his girlfriend or wife, but only whilst doing press-ups.
Yeah. And I mean,
it makes sense. he's so shredded, isn't he? His body is insane.
3% body fat year round.
He is ridiculous. And the home gym kind of, makes complete sense. The only thing I'd say about Son's performance is I thought our best move of the match was the one that created Son's headed chance. I really like that. I really like the way he timed his run to the back post and Bergwijn got his head up and picked him out. And he was really unlucky, actually. It was a decent effort. It was probably the right height for the goalkeeper. Maybe he needed to loop the header a bit more or power it down. But I like the run. I thought there was good intent there, and hopefully there'll be more of that to come. I was a little bit disappointed with Son because with him having been on military service, I just assumed that he'd come back and like be super fit and straight into the rhythm. But I mean, I was putting together a lot of component parts there that probably weren't there, so that's my own fault for getting my hopes up. Outdoor Dads on from Reddit, I got no idea how I meant to say that. He said, could Stevie B be one of our most crucial players for us in the next 5 years in regards to building our squad? He's been really impressive since he joined us, hasn't he, Nathan? And I thought he had a great game, really good game against United.
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited about his signing because of his talent. I wasn't excited because, again, like I've been saying for window after window, and I'm about to say again about Ryan Fraser, we signed a winger when we've got calamities you as well, but his talent is really special, and it was a really good capture, and he's like, I thought he might take a little, because he's 22, he's been playing Eredivisie football, which is often at slower tempo and much less physicality, but like physically he stood out in this game, like he was strong on the ball, the way he lowers his body weight and everything, dynamic, pushing past defenders and everything else. He's only 22, and he's already a top six player for sure. Definitely. You know, the question is like, is he going to be crucial to our rebuild over the next 5 years? Sure. I think more generally, he's a really good player, and he's 22, and we have him.
Really good player. Really exciting. Steps up with goals. Scored against both Manchester clubs. That is no mean feat. I think he has a very high ceiling. I'm really, really, really excited to see what he can do. I like the fact that he's versatile and he can play a number of positions. I mean, you could trust him in any of the three behind the striker, and you'd probably even trust him as a striker every now and again as well.
That's what I really... What my favourite thing about him is that he can play left and right. Sure, a lot of players can, but he can play inside left or inside right... he can play inside left or outside left, and he can play inside right and outside right. And that is such a hard thing to do, to have the sort of the playmaker role with your outside foot, or to be the winger with your inside foot and everything. I really like that sort of that dynamic to his positional game.
You can tell his education has been in the Netherlands, because he's so neat technically. He kind of does everything in as few touches as necessary, which means he naturally has more space to make things happen. He also attacks space really well. I think he could actually even play as part of a midfield three. He's that good. Really excited about Bergwijn. And yeah, I think if we can give him a run of games now, then it will bode well for next season. The thing that worries me is one of Mourinho's post-match comments, which, I mean, I think he was probably making a point about keenly feeling the absence of Lucas and having a yet another option taken away from him. But he kind of implied that Lucas would have started and he would have had Bergwijn to bring on, which to me is disappointing, because I see Bergwijn as already being so much more effective than Lucas. And why would you say that when the guy has just had like a really good game and scored our goal? It just seemed a bit concerning.
He was probably our best player.
Yeah, I would agree. Do you think he would have started Lucas and not Bergwijn?
He seems to really like Lucas. I feel differently.
Yeah, and let's not shit on Lucas again, because I think people
he's not done anything wrong for us to dig into him. But it is a little strange to me how much Mourinho seems to really like Lucas, when I think that there are several better players competing for his game time.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'd say about Lucas is his judgment is poor on the pitch, but it's even worse off the pitch. Look at Brazil right now. That's a horrible thing to say. I don't know why I said that. Dan Meniscus says, do you agree with Mourinho in that the tactical approach was correct for this game, and that it was fatigue or lack of squad depth that ultimately let us down?
It's difficult, because for me there's it worked in this game. I think we were unlucky to only draw. I think it specifically for the game, it was correct, partly because of our opposition, partly because of our own fitness, etc., etc. But is the way we approach this game, looking at the season or this sort of short pseudo season, but also the future of Tottenham, are we heading in the right direction? Yes, I think that we did a very good job of executing the Mourinho mid-block and counter game. Yes, we probably should have come away with the result. I think we could have been better on the counter. I think if we were better on the counter, we'd have torn United apart. If we saw, if you look at Bergwijn's goal, if we had three or four more moments like that, I think we'd really have killed United off. And I don't think that it was out of reach for us to have had those. But I don't know if that is... If we execute that game well, if that's a fruitful approach to football long term.
I totally agree. I totally agree, Nathan. Let's probe this a bit more, because what I've noticed on social media is that there are a lot of people who were very unhappy about the nature of the performance and felt that we should have attacked. One of the rationale for that is that we were playing a home match. Not that that's even really a thing anymore, or certainly not for the rest of this season. But I like what you're saying now. I agree that I think the approach was right for this opposition. And the reason I say that is United are a step ahead of us right now. That, they've had a period, although brief, it's certainly been longer than ours, of stability. They've also added Bruno Fernandes to their team, and kind of he's bedded in really, really quickly, and is probably one of the best attacking midfielders in the Premier League already. I mean, that sounds mad to say that.
No, 100%. But... he might be the... So De Bruyne, Silva... I'm struggling. He's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, he's crazy. Madison would be up there as well, I guess, as an alternative. But I think Fernandes just has more more creativity than Maddison. He's ridiculously good. But not just that, you know, they've got Rashford, who's an excellent player. Martial, who hit a bit of form prior to the break. McTominay, who I really like, you're not so keen on. And Fred, who I thought was a joke player, but is actually proving to be very handy now.
I rated Fred, and I had some tweets about how good he was going to be, and then he was terrible for like 18 months. So I'm glad that he's showing his true colours now, because I think he's a really, really talented player. And then obviously Pogba came on, and I think that was, rather than us losing Lamela for Jedson, although maybe that, you know, that played some part, I think the bigger change was Pogba coming on.
Indeed. And what I'm trying to say here is that United are a really good team. Although their last few years would not necessarily show that, they have, I think, a really good team, probably not a really good squad, but a really good team. And I think with a couple of key signings, they're going to be strong next year. So I don't think it's fair to sort of say that Spurs should be smashing United, basically, particularly given that we've got all these players fresh back from long-term injuries. So I thought the setup was the right thing. I thought it was the right approach. And like you, I think if we'd had some fresher players, it could have worked well. Let's talk about the reasons why it didn't work well on the counter necessary for us. I think the biggest is Harry Kane. It feels horrible to say that, but he was really bad, wasn't he?
He was, and I tweeted as such, and a lot of Spurs fans got upset with me, which is always going to happen, and I have to, you know, I know what I'm doing when I opened that up. We all want to be incredibly defensive of him, and there are a million reasons to, you know, first game back, he's been injured. He looks like he might be carrying a little bit of extra weight. You know, it's essentially, like we talked about earlier, it's August. Well, we know Kane's history, his record, in August is weak, that kind of thing. You know, all of those reasons and more. But it is always... I did a podcast with Football Today with my friend John, and we talked about Harry Kane at length, and I said that essentially I think we're going to learn a fair amount about Harry Kane over this this sort of seeing the season out thing, because he's had an enforced extended break for the first time in his career. And so if the reason he's been a little slow over the last, I don't know, couple of years now is because he's needed that break, well, he's had it now, so what can he show us? Now, it's definitely too soon within a single game to say, oh no, he hasn't immediately refound full match fitness, he's not a good player anymore. Obviously that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I'm like on the edge of my seat waiting to see like 2017 Harry Kane again, and every match that it doesn't happen, I'll get more and more nervous and more upset.
I feel exactly the same. I do feel nervous. I'm not ready to kind of throw the towel in just yet, because I still strongly believe there have been so many sort of mitigating factors around what's happened with Kane that could be non-ankle things. But with each passing game where he doesn't look elite, it becomes more and more of a concern. And in this match, he tried. I mean, he really tried. He put in a shift. He covered the most kilometres of anyone on our team,
really?
Over 11. Probably not a good thing, by the way. And he competed plenty. So he competed in 19 duels, and his duels won percentage was 26.3%. He competed in 13 aerial duels, and his aerial duel won percentage was 23.1%. They are really poor numbers. You want Kane to be at least around the 50% mark, I would say. At least around the 40% mark. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He was in their centre-back's pocket. He was occupying centre-back, sure, but he wasn't doing enough, and it was very concerning, and he was a big reason why we failed to take advantage of counter-attacks, I felt. It's worrying. I was very surprised he played the full 90 minutes, although I think it's good that he kind of has that fitness under his belt now. With a player just coming back from injuries who has a record of being poor when coming back from injuries and sometimes suffering relapses, you don't want to push it with Kane, particularly when there's another match coming up soon on Tuesday, which I expect he'll start again. Did you think he might get taken off after sort of 55, 60 minutes, or were you expecting him to stay on for the long haul?
I was a little surprised that he carried on, but it does also make sense in terms of, yeah, just getting those minutes under his belt. Even though he covered the most distance, I don't think that he was being, certainly it appeared to be lacking in a way that was detrimental to our performance, that he wasn't like hugely exerting himself. So I think it's about, yeah, just getting him those minutes at a moderate pace of his own to get him to fitness. I think that was the thinking behind him playing the full 90 minutes rather than a tactical one. or sort of going against a fitness one. I think it was a pro fitness approach.
I hope that's the case, and I hope that kind of works for us over the remaining games. I do have concerns. I feel worried for Kane.
And also, so I think he grew into the game. I've read people saying the opposite, but I thought late on he started to move into the wide left to pick up the ball and got several more touches and started got a couple of sort of sprayed passes away from that position as well.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think that we could have moved Son inside and given Kane a rest after 60 minutes or so. Sure. And I think we would have improved as a team having done that. I mean, before the game, I tweeted that I thought we had really good impact subs on the bench. And I was kind of expecting Mourinho to use all five subs and probably use them quite early, but that wasn't the case. And Onomar is a baller from Reddit. He says, why doesn't Jose make smart attacking changes without bringing on an attacking player? For example, yesterday he could have brought on Ndombele for Winks, which would have given us more creativity, and Sessegnon for Kane, and put Son as a lone striker and Sessegnon on the wing so we could have had more pace and attack. When Ole Gunnar Solskjaer brought on Greenwood, he caused us problems with his runs when he had tired legs. Only using 2 out of 5 subs was very bad management. Some players looked dead towards the end. It's difficult to disagree. I mean, we had Kane, Son, Sissoko and Bergwijn returning, and only Bergwijn was taken off, right? As well as Lemina, obviously. But that was surprising. And I thought Sessegnon would have been a really good choice. But I also thought Ndombele, kind of after all these one-to-one training sessions, I thought that this was the game where he'd come on and make a difference. Were you surprised that we didn't make a few more subs, Nath?
Sort of like from a looking from the beginning of the game perspective, you look at the 11, you go, okay, fair enough, people are at different levels of fitness. Well, at least we'll see Ndombele off the bench because there's 5 subs, and it was disappointing he didn't come on. But I understand within the flow of the game when it's 1-1 and it's tense. And also partly you can tell Mourinho's like, well, if we get a goal, I can make 3 subs at once and we can take like 5 full minutes making the subs and that kind of thinking. But yeah, I mean, we don't know we just don't know the level of fitness of these players. I really want to see Ndombele. Desperately, I want to see him demonstrate his fitness. And I want Sessegnon to be getting minutes for us, of course. And you want to see the manager take advantage of having 5 subs, even if that means only making 4 subs, you know. But I also do get like sort of the context of the game and why he might have wanted to stick with what we had out there.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it was more frustrating for me today watching Chelsea and seeing Lampard make changes which turned the game in their favour, taking off players who were coming back from lengthy injury layoffs. So I was kind of thinking, why couldn't we have done something? Why couldn't we have done something similar? Really frustrating. I mean, it's lovely to see Lo Celso. Lovely to see Lo Celso come on and get some minutes and look really good and involved. But like you, I was hoping to see Ndombele come on and do something similar. And we could have given him a relatively free role in terms of like defensive responsibility with the setup we had. He could have played the Lemina role. Instead, we brought on the Portuguese Josu Anima, as I've seen him called on Twitter.
That's good.
He wasn't great, was he?
That's because he isn't great. He's a kid and he'll go on and have a perfectly good, you know, professional career in Portugal or whatever. But like, he's such a weird, weird signing. And I get that like it's a financial thing and it's just a gap thing and getting legs into the squad. But like, for that reason, he's like the last player I want to see on the pitch because he's a middlingly good young player
who isn't ours.
Who isn't ours will never, you know, be a Champions League level player, I don't think. And I don't mean any of this as a put down. That's just the reality of it and who he is. So he's not someone who's going to come. And again, yeah, it's a matter of fitness. You know, maybe he was the only person who was fit enough to come on and play 60 minutes in that demanding 10 role and all of that kind of stuff. But it's like, you're excited to see Ndombele. You're excited to see Sessegnon. You're excited to see different shapes and different looks and different options up top, and then like the minutes consumer comes on and consumes some minutes for you.
Yeah, it wasn't thrilling watching him out there. Bless him. He tries. He's a trier. I'll give him that. and he doesn't give up if things don't go right for him the first time. Like, he'll keep going at players, and that I'm sure will have an effect at some point. But like you, I don't think he's that great yet. And I would have much preferred to have seen someone else come on.
Come
not mentioned Dyer at all yet, so let's talk about him. I think you, like me, thought Dyer was having a really, really good game up until the penalty.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, okay, that's shaped, but I heard a rumour, a very strong rumour, that Mourinho has been saying within the club that Dyer has been very, very good in training recently. And so I guess I was sort of biased by that, and I was looking on Dyer optimistically, and he wasn't putting a foot wrong, and he was doing well in challenges, and he was being commanding, and his passing was good, and he was being comfortable on the left as a right footer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going, well, you know, Dyer's having a good game. Dyer's having a good game. And then Pogba runs around him.
Yeah, and he was really naive with what he did. I've seen people say it's a soft penalty, and
sure,
we got questions saying, was it a penalty? I thought it was. What did you think?
I don't care. Like, sure, whatever, either way is fine. You know, if a player, you know, runs around you in the box and you touch them, sometimes that's
not even touch, like lean into.
Sure.
It's foolish, isn't it?
Maybe. I'm so disinterested in discussing, you know, what constitutes as a penalty and what constitutes as a dive when it comes to physical contact in the box. It's just, you know.
Sure. No, I get that. Okay, so let's talk about this instead in relation to that incident. And it was highlighted by Sky, but I was yelling at my TV screen before they mentioned it as well, because it wound me up. If we had a defensively capable number six on the pitch, Dyer would not have been isolated in the way that he was. Harry Winks was watching it unfold, and Harry Winks is not a naturally defensive player. It's not in his instincts to position himself to snuff out danger. And it's an area of his game that Mourinho is apparently working on, his defensive instincts. But he needed to be there closer to Dyer doubling up and stopping Pogba having so much room to work. And I think had he been, we wouldn't have been in that position. What do you think to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the exact issues that led to the moment. I'd have to rewatch it. I can happily take your word for it that Winks missed it. I thought generally throughout the game that Winks and Sissoko were both doing good defensive work. You could tell that the medium block had been drilled. When do the central midfielders step up to support the pressure of the forwards? When do they drop the passes to United's forwards in behind them? When do they track runners going wide? It's all that kind of stuff. I thought both of them looks really strong in those departments. But if you don't have someone who, one, has been doing that the majority of their career and is a standout defensively, and two, is also extremely athletically talented, which, okay, Sissoko is, but he, you know, doesn't have the reading of the game that you're looking for there, then those issues, you know, you can coach and coach and you can be Jose Mourinho, you know, a legendary defensive coach, and those mistakes are still going to crop up eventually.
Absolutely. And you're right. I thought Winks had a decent game overall, particularly in the first half. I thought he was really calm in possession, and most of our good moves started with Winks. He played some really nice passes, which were not easy to play. Sissoko, I thought, had a very quiet first half, which I guess you'd expect with a player returning from injury. But typically, like as Sissoko always does, he stayed in the game until the very end, and he made some absolutely crucial interceptions in the last 20 minutes. I don't know where he got the energy from, but he dug deep and found it, and he was really, really good in the last 20 minutes, I thought. And they both came out of the game with 9 possession gains, so they were doing something right in the midfield area, which is really helpful.
I want Sissoko to have a quiet game, which is kind of a disrespectful thing to say, but you know what I mean? Like, I want him to, like, yeah, offload the ball quickly, not be involved in counterattacks, and do the running in midfield, but while being on the ball as little as possible. So a quiet game from
Sissoko. That is what happened. I mean, he made about half of the number of passes of Winks. He barely got on the ball to Sissoko. There's very little of him kind of dictating play, which is kind of what you'd expect, right? Winks is there to pass the ball and keep it and maintain possession and find passes. Sissoko is there to cause havoc and try and win the ball back.
100%, yeah. No, in which case, you know, he's definitely fulfilled his role there, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's still a horrible combination, though.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, the biggest the Winks Sissoko thing is something that predates the current manager, and it goes back to having a manager who wants to control the game, whose entire model of play is built on control, and Winks and Sissoko being a terrible pair for fulfilling that task. We never tried, or we spent very little time even attempting to control this game, and so for that purpose, Winks and Sissoko are still not an amazing pair of footballers, but less ill-suited to the task, and better trained in the specific role of being a medium block counter midfield pair.
And probably both better in transition than any other part of the game. So quite well suited to counter-attacking, I guess.
There you go.
That might be different against West Ham, and we might need to change that midfield combination.
Oh, 100%.
Before we move on to talking about West Ham, though, a question from Bork Bork from Reddit once again. He said, what did you make of Aurier's performance? Always an extra inch favourite. How did you find Aurier?
He didn't give up any penalties or any red cards. He didn't get blown up for any foul throws. He was wasteful in attack a handful of times. For me, that's a middle of the road Aurier performance. I think, has he come under a bit of flack for that game?
He has. I didn't think he was good. Okay. One thing I would say in defense of him, though, is he was absolutely gassed after about 55 minutes. He had it completely. He needed to come off.
He made a mistake in the lead up to the sort of the non-penalty.
He did. And also, I think the chance that Lloris saved.
I'll tell you what, though. His hair looking fresh as hell, my man.
The zigzag thing.
Yeah, that's not something that's been done several weeks ago, is it?
I mean, notable across the Premier League, basically.
Yeah, that's true.
Lots of Premier League footballers have been seeing barbers, that's for sure. Yeah, Aurier wasn't great, basically. Bork Bork also says, what is our best centre-back pairing? Do you think there's any way that the best centre-back pairing currently isn't Alderweireld and Sanchez?
Yeah, I mean, if Dyer has sort of like made some progressions in his centre-back game over the sort of the training periods, the off period, I can, you know, it's definitely possible for him to overtake Sanchez, who we have to remember is still a young developing centre half with technical shortcomings in possession, at least. Hmm. It's definitely Alderweireld and like we know that much.
Yeah. And I assume it was fitness that meant he couldn't start rather than the lack of pace. Surely. That Mourinho perhaps hinted at. I said to my dad 5 minutes before the United penalty, you know what, maybe Dyer can save us a fortune. And then I was made to look stupid. But I mean, he has got a lot of attributes that you would like in a centre-back. He's incredibly strong in the air. Mm. He won all of his aerial challenges in this match.
Yeah.
He kept Martial very quiet. Martial had pretty much just as bad a game as Harry Kane, to be honest.
Sure.
He's quite quick across the ground. He's not quick on the turn, but at covering ground, he's quite quick. He can bring the ball out from the back. He's comfortable in playing in midfield, so we know that he's fine at having touches. So there's something there to work with, and maybe Mourinho will try to do that over the summer period and convert Dyer fully into a centre-back and not look to offload him.
It occurs to me that I'm feeling much, much more positive about Eric Dyer since he climbed up some chairs in the crowds to fight someone who was dying on his brother. That's like, he's really undone for me a lot of the damage he'd done with his performances over the last 2 years by trying to fight a Spurs fan.
That is mad, isn't it? Become a cult hero again. Yeah, no, I really warmed him after that too, I have to say. So what changes are we expecting for the West Ham game? I mean, my post-match tweet about Ndombele was, if he doesn't start that game, I'll be pretty cheesed off. There must be a reason why he didn't get some minutes in the United game, and I'm hoping it's that he's going to play the full 90 or as close to it as possible against West Ham.
I think if someone was going to be playing a full 90, they'd also be playing like 10 minutes in the previous game. So I wouldn't be surprised if he I'd be upset if he doesn't get any minutes against West Ham. But I wouldn't sort of expect him to start. I wouldn't latch onto that. I don't know, again, it will remain hard for the next 3-4 weeks to have any idea who is close to match fit and who is way off and who can play 90 minutes jogging around without touching the ball in the style of Harry Kane. I mean, you can only really do that if you're playing up front, to be honest. So, I wouldn't be surprised if there were loads and loads of changes, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's the same 11 again, because there's just no way of knowing. Tactically, like we said, that would be a poor fit. But we just don't know who is ready to play and who isn't.
Mm. Yeah. So this game, we'll expect to have a lot more of the ball. So we would expect another possession player in there, perhaps. We'd expect a bit more expression from the team. And so Lo Celso is the obvious candidate to start if he's fit enough. If Lucas is back, does he come straight back in? It would seem really, really harsh to drop Bergwijn after such a strong performance and a goal, of course. I'm intrigued. I'm really intrigued to see what he does. Sessegnon would be an obvious candidate to freshen it up a bit, but then he likes this kind of back three, and Sessegnon certainly couldn't play that role. He would be the more attacking fullback, and Aurier, you can't imagine dropping in to make up a back three if they were to do it in the other way. So, I suspect the back four, except from potentially Alderweireld coming back in if he's fit enough, I suspect it will remain unchanged there. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'd like to see Ndombele come in for Sissoko, and I'd like to see Lo Celso come in for Lamela. But switch those round. So I'd have like a midfield three basically with Ndombele just ahead of Winks and Lo Celso. But I can't see him dropping Sissoko. I think he likes him.
I think he likes his fitness. Like, again, like we were saying before with Lamela, just ridiculous in that regard, Sissoko is so.
Mm. So on to more important issues, Nathan. Are you crowd sound or no crowd sound?
Definitely no crowd sound.
And why is that?
Okay, two reasons. One, like, it's not that it's bad, it's that it's good, and I find that very uncanny valley. Like, specifically, like, it's good, and you forget that there isn't a crowd in the stadium, and then, like, one of the home team players gets, like, horrifically fouled, and the crowds continue with a steady murmur, and you're like, what the hell? Oh, yeah, no, it's a fake crowd, and I find that very disconcerting, and, like, it makes you extremely paranoid about post-crowd football long-term and all that kind of nonsense. But also because I'm a nerd and I want to hear what the players and the staff are shouting to each other more clearly as sort of the payoff as the compromises. I want to hear, clearly what people are saying to each other in terms of instructions and comments and stuff. So I want to hear that.
Judging by the amount of time Sky Sports commentators are having to apologise for bad language, I would say that you shouldn't expect too much from over here in the comments shouting. But I agree, I find it quite interesting. It's interesting in some ways just to find out who the most vocal players on the pitch are. There's something in that. Lloris certainly seems to be ours.
Yeah, well, he always has been. Like, that's a pre-no crowds. Like, he's got a yell on him, hasn't he?
He certainly has. Yeah, I agree that the crowd sound is really realistic. I feel like I'm being manipulated with it. They kind of throw in a few... almost like club songs as well. I think I heard When the Spurs, which also could, I guess, have been Oh When the Reds, because United sing the same song. But yeah, that felt like they were manipulating me a little bit. I didn't like that. So I went for the no crowd sound for the majority of the game. Again, the majority I've watched so far has been with the crowd sound off. But I do think it's good. I do think it's effective in that they're making it sound as close to actual football as possible. But yeah, that is concerning. Very odd to see the balls being disinfected and the corner flags being sprayed. Kind of hammers home exactly what's still going on. Have you changed the way you're feeling about this whole thing at all, Nathan?
Not really, no. Other than, like, you know, it's been going on a few days now and, like, nothing has, like, exploded or whatever.
I guess we'll know more when the next round of testing
happens. It will be a while before we learn what the effects are. But it's like, I have not left... Okay, I have a garden, but I've not left my house and or garden for, like, 2 months. And then, like, I turn on the TV and it's like, okay, yeah, they're, like, disinfecting the ball, which is... weird, but then there's just like 30 guys in a tunnel, none of them wearing masks, talking into each other's faces. And it makes you think, you know, is this essential? Is that what essential means?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't want us to, like, we don't have to assume this is how I feel until I say otherwise. It's worth just talking about the football and don't think that, like, I can't just see the football for what it is but you know, it does hamper the experience somewhat, partly because of like the pre-season pace to the game and everything. But it's weird, man. It's weird.
Sure. Yeah. And I think you and I probably see things slightly differently to the majority of the population because we both know people who are shielding. And so that kind of hammers it home a lot more. So I drove down to my parents in Somerset this weekend, and as I was driving, I noticed that there are an awful lot of people out, basically acting as if it's business as usual and not really adhering to any kind of distancing measures. But I guess I shouldn't be fully surprised by that, given how the messaging's kind of changed over the last week to 2 weeks. So
yeah, I mean, it's been a mess from the off. Like, and I don't blame individuals. I mean, individuals are always going to like flaunt things, but the message that the government want us to create is a bunch of individual selfish people have ruined it for everyone, but that is not the case at all. It is a systemic failure in this country and several others that is going to kill hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. Yeah. And football is a reminder of that. That's where I am, and so I find it quite difficult watching it still. But at the same time, I really did enjoy watching Spurs. I'm happy to say that.
And I don't for a second think it is even vaguely hypocritical to say we shouldn't be doing this and also enjoy what you do get out of it.
So we had a bunch of questions sent in from people on Reddit. Thank you very much for those. We had planned to record this podcast with Bardi, but our schedules didn't align. But what we'll do is save all those questions for our next podcast, which will hopefully be after the West Ham game, and I'll put those questions to both Nathan and Bardi. So thank you for all your questions, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Peace and love.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindner for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davy Shambles and his SoundCloud D Lindner. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.